Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Jim Rowe, who is executive vice president of the James Mintz Group. He's also the managing partner of their DC office. And I thought I'd spend a few minutes talking with Jim about director diligence. Obviously, the recruitment process has changed over the past few years, but even more important, I think, is the amount of diligence that companies are doing regarding their board candidates, and also that board candidates are doing about companies. But we're going to have Jim talk about this since he's an expert on the matter. So first question is, Jim, is what does the Mintz Group typically do to vet a board candidate?
Thanks, Brock. Well, we've been doing this for about the last 10 years, and our clients are the leading public companies, and we work with the corporate board and the executive search firms traditionally, and they come to us after they have made a determination on suitability regarding the candidate or candidates under consideration. And we then go, based on their prior work, looking at the selected candidate or candidates where we work very closely either directly with the company or with the search firm, where we look at the candidate's past. We don't just look at their personal past, but we look at their professional experience. So we trace their footsteps in both realms. And most of the time we do that with their consent. Consent is required for an executive position. It is not required for a board appointment, but more and more our clients are asking candidates for board positions to sign a consent to, and that facilitates some of our fact-finding. I won't go into the long list of steps that we take, but we do look at candidates going back to college at times, where we look at their civil criminal litigation, if they have any regulatory sanctions, verifying credentialing and licensing. We do a deep dive on the news cycle, which is now blogs and permissible social networking sites that we can get access to because they're public, and get to know that person's past in both their professional and what they've done personally since college, more often than not. You can't do this all online. You often will need to go sort through paper records at public repositories and look at it very carefully on-site as well as online. We do hundreds of these a year, and a good percentage of the time we are an important factor in the decision-making process, but more often than not, we don't turn up things that may affect that ultimate decision on whether this person is suitable or not. We do this literally around the world more and more, and so one change has been the global nature of our work.
So that's getting towards my second question, is sort of how has the diligence process changed? You said the Mintz Group's been around 10 years. Sort of how what are the changes that you've seen over that decade?
Well, I think if you think about the two-step process here of suitability being determined by the company that the candidate is appropriate to be considered, then our work, independently done, separate firm, looking at the person's public record past, this is more and more an assumed step in the due diligence process. 5 years ago, it wasn't as commonplace to supplement suitability with a due diligence review. Now it's an assumed step, and we have clients that are highly recommending that this be done as part of the final selection process, and some are even making their companies opt out of doing this instead of opting in to do it. So I think the due diligence work that we do is much more of an industry standard. Now, there are surveys that show that 50% of the corporate boards are not using outside search firms. I think that's still troubling, but I think the trend is clearly to to buttress suitability with a public record background check. And the SEC's recent rule requiring broader disclosure of legal proceedings by directors or nominees is just an illustration of this push to have more informed corporate decision-making and governance in selecting directors. There's a unspoken slogan, I think, that our clients have, which is trust but verify. And I mentioned that the global checking is literally being asked to be done at all corners of the globe. That's because our clients have multinational tentacles and reaches around the world. And many of these candidates at the top level, whether they're a C-suite candidate or a board candidate, they either are based abroad or have worked extensively abroad. And that requires a deep understanding of how foreign jurisdictions work. So you've got to really know the tricks of the trade of where to get litigation records in Italy. You've got to know how to get the legal digest in Japan translated. You can't just go off English publications. And I'd say another change has been a background check. Maybe 5 years ago, people would say, has he ever been arrested for drunk driving? What we really do, the heart of what we do, more often than not, the most critical determinant is really whether that person has performed in a professional fashion and exemplified stewardship. Yes, there are candidates that have a personal misstep, and if it's serious, then that's important to consider. Or if there's a repetitive pattern of misconduct, let's say lots of tax liens, yes, personal missteps are important, but more often than not, clients are coming to us to take a deep look at the person's professional past and to probe for any problems that may not explicitly name the candidate. The candidate might not be named as a party in an SEC proceeding or a Department of Justice investigation, but if that candidate presided from a fiduciary standpoint in that position of investigation and potential sanctioning, it's important to delve deeply into that realm, because really what you're looking for is the experience and judgment of the candidate and whether that person matches up to those expectations of performing well, whether in a crisis or on a day-to-day basis. So I would say the focus on professional accomplishments and stewardship is really the keystone of due diligence today.
Given that a lot of us out here listening to this have no experience in what you do, I think anything you do, there's probably a lot of surprises. But for you, what sort of surprises about the board vetting process have you encountered?
Well, we have a few of those. I would say occasionally you'll get a candidate who doesn't want to sign the consent form, thinks that he or she has performed admirably, and why do they need to stoop to signing a consent form? Their pass is an open book, and that can be a yellow flag, because it is such a standard now, not only to have a consent to be expected, but it's accepted by 90% of the candidates. So we sometimes worry if a candidate saying he or she does not want to sign a consent. Again, that's not required for a director position, but more and more of our clients want us to get that consent, because that allows us to look at creditworthiness, to confirm credentialing, and oftentimes you get such mundane things that may be more significant if traffic violations that are repetitive. But that can be a surprise if at the outset the candidate is balking at signing consent. Surprises, we rarely get a big whopper in the sense of somebody making up a degree or making up a job, but what we get a fair amount of are some inconsistencies that, or admissions or undisclosed controversies. You'll often get a list of other boards that the director candidate has been on in the past or currently, and sometimes affiliations are dropped off resumes, and that may just be innocent, or it may be a sign of that was a company that didn't do too well, or perhaps she was on the audit committee, and there was a problem with the finances of the company. So we'll find inconsistencies, omissions, undisclosed controversies, and that can be a yellow flag or that can just be inadvertent. Some of these people are very accomplished and have been on dozens of boards and had many high-level jobs, and either in the vetting process it wasn't asked for or they didn't volunteer it. But if we find a job that falls off a resume, 50% of the time we're going to find some other problem. And those are the kinds of things that we will find from time to time. Candidates are much better off disclosing past controversies than keeping their fingers crossed that we're not going to find it. We have a consent normally. We have the candidate profile or resume, and we also know where this person has lived and worked since college through our databases that we subscribe to. So we literally can follow that person's footprints professionally and personally going back, say, to college. And we'll find something on the public record if it's there, not just online, but if it's at the courthouse. And candidates who have had issues, and most of us have, are far better off saying, well, I had this problem 20 years ago, or I was named in an SEC proceeding that didn't go anywhere. Their credibility goes way up with us and with their and with our clients when that's disclosed up front. We don't jump to conclusions if there's a side business at the person's residence. That might be for a spouse setting up a business. But if it's a company that looks like it might have a vendor relationship with one of his or her past jobs, that's going to be something that we're going to put an eye on. So those kinds of things. You had mentioned candidates sometimes come to us and ask us, could you take a look at this company? Because I'm not sure this is the right fit for me. And there is an emerging trend now with some of the most sought-after executives and director candidates where they want to take a look at the company that is approaching them. So that's another little bit of surprise for people. I'd also say that some of our clients are asking us to do a more limited vetting earlier in the process as the individual is under strong consideration but has not been finally selected. We are now being asked for a few hundred dollars a crack to take a look at that individual's past from a licensing, credentialing, and news controversy standpoint. But we do that around the globe in local languages. So we're not just going to look at John Smith in the Wall Street Journal. We're going to look at John Smith if he was in China in the Chinese press. So we're getting asked to do that too. And that's a little bit of a new trend that's a little bit of a surprise that I think we'll see more and more of.
Well, this has been great stuff, Jim. We really I appreciate you doing this because those of us out here really don't have a handle on the board diligence process, and this is very useful. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.